Stephen Cates joins us now from Bankrate on WGN Radio and on the Noontime Business Lunch. Stephen, let's talk a little bit about some of the jobs numbers and the inflation numbers. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So the CPI report for October, what do we know?
Well, we know that it was a big, big surprise. I think that we also know that the government shutdown really created some degradation in how the collection of data was handled. And that's something that we're going to have to corroborate this report with December, even January's inflation data, to get a better sense of whether inflation is truly cooling or even cooling to this extent.
What was the number, though, for October?
Oh, so October came in headline inflation at 2.7% annually, and core inflation, which excludes food and energy, at 2.6.
And for any given month, is that tolerable? Is that seen as high? Is it trending up or down? Put it in context.
So we've been stuck relatively consistently at around 3% annual inflation. So this is a big step down from where that was. You know, if this persists as a trend, this would be meaningful improvement in inflation and something that the Federal Reserve would really be quite happy about, given the fact that they have been trying to push inflation down towards their 2% target. So we're not at our target. 2% is where we want to be. We're still above that, but this is a huge step forward if we can take this at face value. And there's some question of whether that is the right thing to do.
Why do you say that?
Well, so we don't have any data for October. There is no inflation data collected for October.
I thought you said this was the October number. This isn't October?
This is the November number.
November number. Pardon me. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what we're looking at is a number that has some assumptions built into it because there was nothing collected during October, and collection for November didn't start until the 14th. So only a partial month was – the BLS is only collecting data for a partial month. And so to extrapolate into creating a report, what they've just delivered today, there are a lot of assumptions in how prices changed from September to October, and then how they changed from October to November. And so those assumptions, you know, can create some wonkiness to this. You know, we can probably assume that this is directionally accurate, that there is some cooling to inflation, but it may not be precisely accurate because some of the assumptions that they're making in building this report may not necessarily be true, but we don't have any data to truly know. And so to corroborate this with a December report or a January report will give us more confidence as to exactly the direction of inflation, and will iron out some of the assumptions, you know, that had to be taken to actually make this report possible.
Right. We're missing 6 weeks. But this is these are numbers that are reported by businesses. Is that right? I mean, I'm just also a little curious about the authenticity, the accuracy of the reporting itself for any given month. Is this the government telling us something, or is this businesses telling the government something?
So this is the government collecting pricing data and going out and collecting that data from businesses, from stores and consumers, and looking at what is actually out there. Now, we do have low response rates in some of this, which can negatively impact the results. One of the things that the BLS has had to do, the Bureau of Labor Statistics had to do, is make some assumptions when they cannot collect certain types of data.
Yeah.
And they have shortages in terms of workers, and they have been strained certainly by the government shutdown. So we saw more of these assumptions being made in November to cover for October and the November reports. And that, again, can skew some of the data. As we get into full month reports, December and January to follow, that will give us a little bit more confidence
in
these individual components.
If this is
a shelter or food.
Pardon me, but if it is a true trend, then it's likely that the Fed would cut rates in January. Is that also an assumption?
I'm not sure if they're going to do that just yet. I think that we will get a December inflation report before they have to make that determination. As of today, I don't think that we can be confident enough that this is strong enough data for them to go ahead and start to predict a cut. We've had three cuts now in 2025, September, October, and December. They may take a pause in January, regardless, to try to weigh some of this data and get a better sense. Now, are cuts coming in 2026? I would strongly say yes. And it's probably going to look like about two cuts at this point. And if we get another low inflation report, then that might be two to three cuts, something like March and June. But January is likely to be a pause.
Last thing then. So while you're cautious about this, just because of the absence of all the data you'd like, this is pretty good news, isn't it?
Yes. You know, at face value, this is amazing news. This would be a huge step forward in the fight against inflation. I think it's important for people to understand that this is not prices falling. It's prices rising at a slower pace. There's a huge difference between that, and I think that is a very important distinction. But coming down from 3 annually to 2.7, you know, is a huge step down and puts us in a position where if that holds and that turns out to be true, we are at or ahead of the Federal Reserve's expectations for where inflation is.
Really interesting. Nice to talk to you today, Stephen Cates. Thanks for giving us some perspective on that. That's Stephen Cates from Bankrate.
Your hometown.
We're back with more from the Your Hometown series. Tag along, and we'll show you why Long Grove should be your hometown. Sponsored by the Lake Zurich Area Chamber of Commerce. Here's John.
And here's Brandon Ewing, who is the Director of Community Retail Branches at BCU, the credit union. Brandon, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Glad to be here, John.
So tell me a little bit about what you all are about. What do you do?
Well, BCU is your community credit union. So we are one of the largest credit unions with $6 billion in assets. And we are truly here today for our members. And I have the awesome privilege of being able to oversee our community branch locations and be out and involved in the community.
Whereabouts is that? What's your region that you cover?
I cover Northern Illinois and Kenosha, Wisconsin. So that's Kenosha, Crystal Lake, Vernon Hills, Libertyville, Gurnee, and Lake Zurich, which is right next to Long Grove.
Yeah, right. Long Grove is what we're talking about a little bit today. And then what's the difference between, you probably get this a lot, a credit union and another kind of bank?
For sure. So credit unions are member-owned, right? So that means that we offer lower rates on loans and pay higher interest and dividends on our CD and products, right? So we even have a Power Plus checking account that pays 8%, right? So the main difference between credit unions is that we are member-owned and banks are owned by their shareholders.
Are your assets protected the way I have insurance on deposits at a bank?
Yes, they are up to $250,000 through the NCUA.
I got
similar,
it.
You know, same as FDIC, just but both are 100% secured.
And then do you focus more on retail, residential, like personal accounts, or are you more business development?
We do both. So we offer business accounts. We offer both consumer and commercial loans. We do mortgages. We are a one-stop shop and a full-service financial institution.
And then how do you sell that? What is the maybe hurdle that you have to overcome, or what's the benefit? You know, how do you market what you do, Brandon?
So, I mean, everybody has needs. You know, we want to purchase cars. We want to purchase homes. we need credit cards in today's age. And so BCU really goes to market, one, by having exceptional member service. So that's a differentiator. And by making sure there's a real value for our members. And another thing that we do that I think differentiates us is that we invest heavily in financial counseling and financial services. So if you need help with understanding your credit report or how to improve your credit score, or if you need to understand your budget, we have actual certified financial coaches at each of our branch locations and even via phone who can meet with you individually, and that's offered for free for both members and non-members.
How do people qualify to be in a credit union? Seemed to me like sometimes you had to be in the electricians union or work for Caterpillar or something like that. Can anybody be in your BCU union?
For sure. There still is what's called a field of membership, John. And so there are many ways that you can qualify for BCU membership. So one is through employment. So if your employer is partnered with BCU and uses us as the financial provider for their employees, then you're eligible through your employer. If you live in Cook, north of 95th Street, DuPage, Kane, Lake, McHenry, Kenosha, or Puerto Rico, then you're eligible for membership. And if you also subscribe to what we have as our Life Money U, which is our financial well-being program here at BCU, if you're a subscriber to that program, then you are also eligible for membership.
So if I'm not eligible, then I'm not in. But suppose I am eligible. Do people then walk in and get a 30-year loan on a home or a 6-year loan on a car? You do those traditional retail banking things?
Yes, we do. And I will say better rates, and at better rates than many other local banks.
Yeah, right. What about fees? How do you guys handle those?
So we try and limit our fees, right? So we have no minimum balance requirements, no annual maintenance fees, any of those type of things.
And then I think one of the ways that people interact with banks these days isn't so much the teller, but the ATMs. Are you tapped into the same network that other banks are?
We are, and we have actually a very large and extensive credit union network of ATMs, and so many ATMs in the area, most of them free. So, yes, we are.
One last thing, Brandon. How's business been lately? I mean, so there you are kind of maybe feeling the pulse of people's spending or business operations. How's it going in Northwest Illinois? Northeast Illinois and Southern Wisconsin.
Things are going right. I think we are hearing the economy and seeing what's going on. But we do have our pulse on what's happening. And right now, one of the things that I think differentiates BCU is that we're here for our members and whatever they're going through. But it is a challenging time for many people.
Yeah, well, we hear that too. Brandon Ewing is the Director of Community Retail Branches at BCU. We're talking about Long Grove today. Our best to everybody over there, Brandon. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, John.
I don't know if you saw the story, but 80% of Chicago area forests throughout the preserves are overrun by invasive shrubs. You may have noticed that. ECHO has partnered with Friends of the Forest Preserves and has been donating professional equipment so they can attack that and keep those things the great resource that they are in Chicago. I wanted to talk a little bit about that business. Harold Redman joins us now, the CEO at ECHO. Harold, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm fine, John. Thanks. How are you?
Good. I'm a big fan of you guys. You have been very helpful to City Kids Camp, which I work with. I've toured your plant. I believe you led me on the tour, and that's quite an operation you guys have over there.
Yeah, we appreciate it here in Lake Zurich. It's over 1,100 people and 700,000 square feet of manufacturing.
Before we talk about the Forest Preserve and the equipment that you've donated, though, is it unusual that a business like yours, I mean, you're manufacturing things there and assembling them and shipping them, that it's operating out of the United States. Is that unusual? Is this the sort of thing that's normally done elsewhere?
Lots of equipment, John, is made elsewhere, but fortunately for us, this is the core market for ECHO's tools with commercial landscapers. So we've been in this market for over 50 years, manufacturing products here in Lake Zurich.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the whole process play out. There are so many details, so many processes, so many things that, in my estimation, as I was walking through that plant and a little overwhelmed, I thought so many things that can go wrong. But that place runs like a top. It is clean. And one of the things that impressed me with your facility was that, say, if you're doing something and plastic shavings come off of one machine as you're creating some sort of thing, you guys sort of would save the shavings and find other ways to reuse them. The economies that you built into your process, I thought, was really, really impressive.
Well, we appreciate that, John. Actually, you know, I give all the credit to the team. We just have a great team out there that knows how to operate a plant. And, you know, on the injection molding that we do, we do regrind our scrap and reuse it. So that is one of our environmental or sustainability initiatives, and we've become pretty good at that over the last several years.
But the proof's in the pudding. You got to have a good product at the end of the day. How's business? Tell me a little bit about your products.
Business is actually very good this year. You know, we, like many other companies, found a way to deal with some of the tariff challenges. But, you know, the weather cooperated, John, which always helps businesses like ours, which are somewhat seasonal in selling more equipment to landscapers and homeowners. So we're having a very decent year and feel good about the direction the business is heading. Plus, we're maturing a couple other business segments that we have in addition to our handheld product, and that would be autonomous robotic mowers and then bigger trailerable diesel generators.
Talk to me about those autonomous mowers.
Well, it's a business that our parent company has owned for over 10 years, and it's located in Europe, but we buy the product from our sister company, and we sell it in this market to golf courses, sports turf fields, and it really takes care of the labor challenge in the market where, you know, many businesses can't find laborers to cut grass. And these autonomous mowers are commercially designed. They're very big. They can operate day and night. They can cut straight lines in fields to make them look very nice. And it's been a business that is really starting to catch on once we provide a demo in the field. And the interested party looks at this. They try the demo. And we've just been growing this business very, very nicely the last few years.
Well, I guess if cars can navigate the roads, mowers can navigate the greens in the fields, huh?
That is true. And, of course, they're designed with safety in mind so that they can't run over things that they shouldn't run over. But they're GPS-based systems, so they understand perimeters and mowing and staying within lines. And it's just a very highly technical product that we're having some good success with here in the U.S.
One more question along these lines, then I want to talk about the forest preserves. But you mentioned tariffs. Did you guys buy materials in advance, or how have you been dealing with that?
Well, we've not really bought materials in advance, but we have planned mitigation strategies, John, behind, you know, making sure that our customers are still getting a great value on our product that they buy. So we've tried to minimize any retail price adjustments that we've had by getting together with our parent company and our suppliers and working to find ways to offset the tariff impacts against the costs. So far this year, I think we've been fairly successful in doing so, and it keeps our product cost competitive, you know, for the customers in the marketplace, which is critical to continue and grow the business.
I don't suppose anybody wants the pressure from the tariffs to do these things, but it's also been interesting to me to observe when people like you say something like that, that while maybe it wasn't as necessary as it was previously, that opportunity to streamline further still, maybe to pressure suppliers or absorb some of the costs, or maybe raise the price slightly. But, you know, how finely can we tune the creation and distribution of this product? When you have to do it, you can do it, right?
That is correct. And you're exactly right, John. It's a combination of many things that you had just mentioned, and especially when tariffs maybe are different for certain countries where we're acquiring components versus other countries might necessitate a move to a different supplier or a move by us to produce in different areas, or even more so here in the U.S.
And then imagine if you say, okay, we'll move to Vietnam. Wait, no, there's a tariff on Vietnam. Okay, back to China. No, wait, China doesn't want to do it. It must be very difficult to sort of anticipate where the, you know, most ideal partners are, right?
That's true. So, you know, most companies, I think, like Echo, are trying to manage the tariffs with a short-term view at the actions to take, plus over time, you know, when we understand the long-term status and impact of the tariffs, what the long-term mitigation strategy would be.
I see Echo stuff in the stores all the time. Are you more retail, you know, consumer, or are you more business?
Most of our business, a higher percentage, sells to commercial landscapers.
Yeah.
And some of those products get sold by Home Depot, but many of those products get sold by our independent dealer channel. So it's the landscapers that really know the value of that product when they run it 8 hours a day. But we have consumers or homeowners that simply want the best product out there, or they have a heavy duty cycle in their lawn and they just need one of our products to take care of their needs.
So it's that heavy-duty stuff, it's the professional-grade stuff that you've donated to the Friends of the Forest Preserves?
It is. I think it's three blowers, a dozen brush cutters, which are heavy-duty products,
yeah,
and then a dozen chainsaws, which all of our chainsaws are fairly heavy-duty.
Yeah, I've talked to people who have operated yours and the competitions, and there's a difference. I know that for a fact. So did they come to you and say, hey, can you help us out? How did this all happen?
Well, we saw this as an interesting opportunity. You know, there were articles out there about the invasive shrubs covering nearly 80% of the Chicago area forest.
Yeah.
We caught wind of that article. We read it. We were very impressed by Friends of the Forest Preserve's mission and long-term perspective on how to turn this around and restore the forest. So after reading the article, we contacted them at Friends of the Forest Preserves to offer our support by providing some equipment that really allows them to accomplish their mission. So we were proactive in initiating the communication.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that. And then off go 27 pieces of professional-grade equipment to help keep our forest, those preserves that we love so much in Chicago, intact. And you guys have just been great community partners all along. Harold Redman is the CEO at Echo. Echo-USA.com is the website. Harold, it's nice to talk to you again. Happy holidays to everyone over there, and thanks for helping out the Friends of the Forest Preserves.
We're happy to do so, John, and thanks for having us on your show again. We always enjoy it.
The Noon Business Lunch closes this show today with John Manchester, back from Windy City Treats. He's the co-owner there. John, thanks for coming in. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I am great, and we're rocking right now. We're working morning till night, before hours, after hours.
Windy City Sweets. I think I may have said treats. They are treats, but they're sweets. And you brought in a tray of cookies and things you're selling this holiday. What's the number one thing you guys sell?
Our s'mores. Our s'mores are our most popular item. We do them in plain milk chocolate. We do them in dark chocolate. We also have peanut butter on them. That's my wife's favorite.
A couple of graham cracker cookies that are triangularly poised. It looks like a big wedge of cheese now. Inside is the mushroom and chocolate all around?
It's marshmallow in there, and then we hand dip it in chocolate. It's all handmade sweets that we make at Windy City Sweets.
How's business been?
Business is good. It's the climate in the city. We don't have a lot of landlords and things like that giving gifts because I think the people are not back into the city. But we've got a lot of smaller businesses that have been coming in for one-offs, maybe like 5, 10, 40 packages, whether it's fine chocolates or treats, or we make their own custom box.
What's on the menu? You've got peppermint bark here, and I'll ask you about what you brought in as well as just what else you serve. Do you guys make fudge?
We do. We've got 8 different types of fudge. The holiday fudge is peppermint. Peppermint's very popular this time of year, along with our peppermint bark.
Brought that in. Then you have those sealed, shrink-wrapped kind of cookies, round sugar cookies with a delicious white icing on top, and then you can print on those now. We've seen those before. I'm always amazed at how fine and specific the printing can be.
It's amazing. We can take your picture. We can take your corporate logo. And as you see here, we have naughty and nice cookies for the season. And for whatever reason, naughty is winning so far.
Oh, people go in and buy a package of cookies?
Correct. You can buy them single. You can buy half a dozen, whatever you'd
like. What's the ratio, naughty to nice, would you say?
It's probably 3-1.
Well, naughty cookies, more fun, but they're both delicious. And then you could maybe put them in stockings or leave them out for Santa, that sort of thing?
We do. And in fact, a few years ago when we did this, we had stockings at our house. I put nice cookies in all of my kids, and my wife usually doesn't check her stocking, but I had the naughty one in there.
There you go. Good thing she didn't look. Talk about your relationship with the Greater Chicago Food Depository.
So right now we've just released a brand new cookie, and it's Tis the Reason because hunger has no season. What we're doing is we're selling the Food Depository cookies at $6, and $2, so a third of it, is going to the depository, trying to bring awareness to hunger in the Chicago area.
Is that the cookie that I just ate?
Yes, it is. How was that?
It was delicious. Boy, dipped in coffee, that's just sit down and enjoy that. So it's a pretty large size, white iced, round sugar cookie, pretty thick cookie. Or is that Not a sugar cookie. What kind of cookie would you call that?
I would say it is probably a sugar cookie.
A sugar cookie,
yeah,
is the way to describe mm-hmm. it. And then you have their logo and stuff printed right on there.
That's correct.
Is that the one you're selling?
That is. That's the one.
So if you sell those for six, you're giving two of the dollars to the Greater Chicago Food Depository?
That's correct.
That's generous. Are you worried about that?
No, we just want to bring awareness again to the people. And again, it's not just right now people are thinking about the hunger in Chicago, but you know, in January, when all the excitement is over, we still want to continue that message out people are still hungry in January and in June and September. So
this is a very easy way to make a donation to the Chicago Food Depository. The Greater Chicago one is just buy a bunch of these cookies and owe $2 from every one you bought goes to them. Is it too late? Christmas is in a week now to get this stuff?
Nope. We're open every day, 11 to 9. And then on Christmas Eve, we close at 5. So you still can.
Really? You work that late?
We do. And we actually will sell these cookies beyond Christmas time.
So. That's a good point. You ship or do I?
We can ship. Yeah. We ship across the country.
So if I click on your website, I could order these right now.
Yes.
You're also, I could just walk in, 3308 North Broadway.
That is correct.
3308 North Broadway in Chicago. It's WindyCitySweets.com is the website.
That's correct, yes.
And anything else you want to mention before we go?
You know what? We do have, besides these treats, we have a lot of other Christmas items. We have molded chocolates and Santas, and we have some Grinch stuff. And then right now it's Hanukkah. And we do have some Hanukkah chocolates there, too.
Got the chocolate-covered Oreos.
Yes.
Chocolate-covered pretzels. And chocolate-covered orange?
We do. We have orange slice and orange peel. So it's the rind of the orange, and we hand-dip it in chocolate. And I have it in milk and in dark. Most people buy dark chocolate in that. And then we have an orange slice that's candied that's also dipped in that. And we do have apricots also, which is a very big seller this time of year.
Who knew? He did. John Manchester is the co-owner of WindyCitySweets.com, WindyCitySweets.com, 3308 North Broadway. Nice of them to help out the Greater Chicago Food Depository. You buy the cookies, and $2 from everyone sold goes to them. Merry Christmas, man. Thanks for coming in.
Merry Christmas to you and your family. Thanks.